and welcome to Beers and Banter, a Mike and Colin podcast, the show where two longtime friends get together to enjoy adult beverages and talk nonsense about the things they love. This week we're finishing up our talk on WandaVision. Now a couple orders of business before we get started. First, this is a deep dive, so consider this your spoiler warning. And second, presumably this is an adult show. There's going to be a lot of adult language fueled by adult beverages, so earmuffs for all the little Padawans out there.
Colin, I see you cracked another beer there.
I did. We continued in very much the same theme, a very red theme. We have what we're trying to do is, we'd like to do this going forward because we're kind of spoiled for our local breweries. And I know that we have a bit of an international audience, as I also remarked before.
So we're going to go for international flavor.
Something that you might be able to get yourself. So we picked up a Feuillage Kronenbourg 1664 Blanc for our second, which is, of course, is French beer.
Yep.
I haven't had the Feuillage, but I have their plain wheat beer I had in Paris years ago when I was in there. But I'd never had this one before.
Right.
And I really like it.
Yeah, it just comes out in the summertime.
Yeah. So it's just for the summer?
Yeah.
Because the 1664 Kronenbourg, you can get that anywhere.
Yes.
So,
and then the Blanc, you still get that.
Yes.
Here, anyways, we get it. You can get it anywhere.
You get it anywhere. But I mean, like...
But then the Rouge is only in the summer.
It has a very similar taste to the first beer that we had.
Yeah. It's very fruity, very nice and light.
Very nice and light. Perfect. Very great summer beer.
Great summer beer.
I'm
drinking in this heat.
Yeah. Great for the heat. So, I mean, it's not a craft by any stretch of the internet. Imagination, but no. I'm enjoying it more than a Lucky.
Delicious.
Hey.
No trashing on Lucky.
Everyone knows how I feel about Lucky.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, that's it tastes a lot like the first beer.
Yeah.
Very it's similar. Kind of a fruity
not,
wheat
not
beer.
As potent.
No, not nowhere near as potent, obviously. Yeah. No, but I like it a great
sticking
deal.
With the red theme though.
Mm-hmm.
So
for the Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, which she becomes officially.
Officially.
That, I like how they pointed that out. I like to say, like, Hayward's like, doesn't she go by some other name, like some sort of alias? And Park there, he's like, no, she's just Wanda.
She's just
doesn't
Wanda.
Doesn't have a costume, doesn't have a name.
No costume. But, of course, she wears the classic Scarlet Witch costume for Halloween,
which is a nice nudge, nudge, wink, wink moment,
this,
right?
This show is all about the nudge, nudge,
nudge,
wink,
nudge, wink, wink. Yeah.
Same with the classic Vision with the green and the yellow cape and all that stuff, right?
And they play it off like he's a Mexican wrestler, right?
Yeah, yeah, luchador. Right? No, that's how he looked in the 80s.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah.
Well, it's funny because when Quicksilver puts on his old style costume, they don't ask what he is.
That's true.
They don't explain
his
it away.
His lightning bolt.
They're just like, and his crazy hair. They're just like,
and
yeah,
his wild hair.
It is like, what it is. You know what he is.
You're like, hey, come on.
They don't bother explaining
we're
it.
We're like, we're past this point now. You guys, you get it now, right? You're
you get the joke.
You're in on the joke now, right? Yeah, but speaking about being in on the joke, we've touched on it before, but in a show like when we did Logan.
Yep.
One of the things I remarked about James Mangold is I can't believe that he was able to craft a movie that really understood itself so well.
Yeah.
You could say the exact same thing for this show and the writing for
this
show.
I think even more so.
More
I
so.
This show.
More so. It's kind of weirdly unique.
Understands itself, but it also understood its audience.
Yes.
More than the audience understood themselves.
This is a... Well, it's an experiential show.
Yeah.
Very much so. I mean, the first touch point is the sitcom trope. Yes. The way it's interweaved, the way it's, you know, and they actually work it into the plot, which is very cool.
Yeah.
Right?
And they worked really hard to get that.
Yes.
Like, they spent a lot of time. They didn't just half do it. They didn't just make it look like a 50s sitcom. They made sure.
No, it's holistic. It's right. Complete. The
it's
level
complete,
of the
yeah.
dialogue, the aesthetic, the intros. God, the intros.
Well, they even brought Dick Van Dyke in as a consultant.
A consultant, yeah.
When
I
writing
read that.
The first episode.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going above and beyond.
Yeah. And that's who Paul Bettany was looking at as the inspiration for his character, right? Was
of course. That Which is why I love that nod where he just goes through the ottoman. He just phases through because yeah. Vision can phase, right? So yes. He wouldn't trip like Dick Van Dyke does.
Yeah, he wouldn't trip over the Ottoman, right?
But again, so that's like one of the very first jokes where they're turning it on its head, where it's like you're expecting something, and they know you expect it, and they go another way, and they do that through this whole series.
Yeah, but of course, I mean, you could obviously make a lot of Bewitched and I Dream a Genie jokes because Wanda lends herself to that, right?
Yes, but, well, pretty, yeah,
yeah,
pretty easily.
But or the chaos that you might see in a, you know, in a, an I Love Lucy episode.
Yeah, exactly. Right? The calamity in the kitchen is classic I Love Lucy stuff.
Yes, exactly. Right, that's classic I Love Lucy. So the degree to the homework, not just how it looks, or not just the dialogue, which is also immaculate.
Yes.
For those scenes.
Yep.
It's perfect. It's perfect. The writing is so strong there. The care that went into replicating those sitcoms is...
Yeah, yeah, it's perfect for every...
For every instance.
Every series they go through.
Yeah.
It's perfect for that time period. Right? Like even the Malcolm in the Middle one, they have the...
Oh, yeah.
The little things to the camera, like the kids
cinematography,
to the
breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah, exactly.
Down to the names of the episodes of Now in Color or, you know, like before a live studio audience. Like these are perfect TV tropes.
Yeah.
You know, and they actually have meaning for the episode.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. So speaking of the writing.
Yes. Yes.
One of my favorite things about this show was the awareness it had for.
Yes.
Of the audience. I've said it a few times. So when they wrote something into the show, they knew how you were going to react and think what it was. And they were tricking you the whole time.
Yes.
They were tricking you. Like they knew they were tricking you. They knew what you were going to guess it was. They weren't trying. They were. It was so obvious what it really was. When you go out the second time, you watch. It's so obvious, Agnes.
Yes,
it's Agatha it is. Harkness.
They really.
The name
they
even
really,
is just a short version.
They really right? telegraph it, and there are even visual cues. Like I noticed the second time, she's consistently wearing that brooch that she takes off
the
her
brooch,
mom,
and she wears purple Salem, all the time.
And she
her
wears
magic
purple,
is purple
all the time. Her magic is purple, and. Even that she's just a little bit different than everyone else in the town.
She seems to know what's going on.
Yes.
When other people are out of it.
Yeah. But it's in such a degree and done with such care that on first viewing, if you weren't, you know, it can be missed.
Yeah. Well, for
it
sure. If you're not looking missed. For it, it could be missed.
If you're not looking for
it. Well, she plays a victim well, too. She plays it off like, oh, she doesn't know what's going on. Like, Wanda, what are you doing? Like, it's Wanda.
Yes. But, I mean, another thing that she does is consistently refers to her... Ralph, who she keeps in the house.
Yes, and you assume is like her husband.
And you have to assume is her husband.
Yeah, Ralph Boner.
But of course, who we find out eventually who Ralph is.
Yeah.
We finally, okay. This to me was maybe the mic drop moment in TV for the year.
Yeah.
What a brilliant thing to do.
It was, well, okay.
I made that noise. I went,
okay, so.
Because when the brain is moving in like seven different directions at once, right?
Yes. When they open the door and it's him at the door. And
when it's Evan Peters.
It's Evan Peters, right. Yeah, it's Evan Peters.
We gotta talk about what's actually happening.
Yes, yes. So
set the scene a little bit.
Yeah, so like ding dong out of nowhere, right? And,
well, not out of nowhere.
Well, that's
Wanda
true.
Needs a misdirection.
That's true
because
they're fighting.
Vision's figuring out the truth,
and Vision even blames her, saying she did it.
Yes,
he's like, oh, he's like, well, this is convenient.
She's like, what have you done? What have you done? What am I? And Vision is right, like, because every time Vision is so close to the truth, she pushes him back.
That's true,
right? Like, there's that one time at the end of the Family Ties episode where.
She runs the credits.
Yeah. She and he's
they're
like
in the middle of the fight. He's like, you can't do
he's
this.
He's like,
to
you
me.
Can't do this. And she can't she's like, can't I?
Yeah. And she rolls the credits
and
before
she rolls
they're done.
The credits
I love that.
Yeah, oh wow. What a great moment.
She's like,
that
show's
is.
Over.
Yes, yes, exactly. But getting back to the because this was to me was the great one of the great television moments for the year. Because wow, was that a grenade in the room?
So right. So it's a grenade because they knew just by hiring an actor, Evan Peters, right?
He didn't even have to be in the show.
No.
They could have just hired him.
Well, I mean...
And created an internet sparking fury.
That is what happened. When it was announced he was on the cast, they didn't say who he was. People went nuts. So
people went nuts.
Here's the thing. When you think about it logically...
I didn't know that, by the way.
Oh, yeah. People went nuts when they found out.
Yeah.
When you think about it logically, so he shows up and he looks like a different person. Just think about it in from the frame of inside the MCU. He looks like a different person. There's no reason to believe that that is her brother. There's no reason to believe it. Because the only reason to believe it is because as an outside audience you've seen those
if Fox the X-Men movies had if the Fox X-Men movies did not exist,
you would why never would you think know? Of anything.
Why would you know?
So they're so aware, they know just by putting him as in there as that character, that people are going to believe it. So it's believable that he came back as Evan Peters because, oh, maybe it's a multiple universe thing. And, ooh, they're bringing the Fox X-Men into it. And in reality, no, he was just a neighbor. And Agnes knew that Wanda was willing to take, would believe anything at this point. Because she was going through grief. She was trying to shake her up, too, and wake her out of it.
People were incredibly disappointed by that red herring, though.
People were disappointed
because
by it.
Because you know how speculation runs wild? Because people's they were disappointed. Wild. They're like, this is the opportunity to adopt mutants into the MCU. This, you know, like, this is the merging, finally, of the Fox-Disney merger and all these things, right?
But you think about it logically. Like I said, within the MCU, that doesn't make any sense because they haven't announced anything about a multiverse yet. They haven't. There's no precedent.
No.
So you shouldn't expect that. That's your own brain expecting it.
I know, right?
And that's the genius of the writing. What a genius moment. Because they knew. They we got you.
But people were disappointed at the payoff. And I'm like, that might be says more about you than it does about the show.
That's what I'm saying, is that how genius is the show, though, for using... They used the audience.
Evan Peters has played the same character in two different iterations.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, in two different quote-unquote universes. It's like... He was the same guy in Marvel 616 and some other, like, the ultimate equivalent.
Yeah.
He's like, and he was like the Layla Miller. He was like, I was in both. Like, it's just a weird mind fuck.
It is a weird. The crazy thing, though, is he's not. He's Ralph Boner. He's not Quicksilver.
He is and he isn't. He's supposed to be, right?
But he doesn't act like him. It's not like he comes in and acts like the guy from the Fox movies either.
A little... He's a lot more like the guy from the Fox movies than he is the original actor who played Quicksilver in the Avengers movies. He's still a kind of loose goof.
Yes.
Right? But I know the inspiration of how he was playing. It was more like, you know, Uncle Jesse, Nick Moore, that's Joey. Right. You know, like the dumb, like goober guy, right?
He's the goober,
You know, like who is a sitcom trope.
Yeah.
Of, you know, like the goofy uncle.
Well, he says it. He's the... The uncle that comes in to cause problems with the husband.
Yes.
Like, he's like, that's what I am. I'm playing a role here. He's like,
hey, you know why I'm here.
Yeah.
You put me here. You know why I'm here, right? Like, cause trouble, gets up to some antics, you know? Exactly. Like, we get maybe a half season arc out of my, you know? Yeah. Like, that's why I'm here,
You know why I'm here.
But what a mic drop moment that was, though. You know, that was one of those.
Because everyone assumed.
Yeah.
That the multiverse was opening up.
Ballsy. But so ballsy.
Just, I see where you said people were disappointed by it. I loved that move. Because I was like, why should we expect that? That's not on them for not paying off. That's on us for assuming.
But it ends in a boner joke, too.
And it ends, Ralph Boner.
That's that final, like, in your face, right? Like,
well, you know, another thing that's funny, another throwaway joke in the middle, it's in the Halloween episode. When he's like, oh, can we go get candy? Was it Tommy that finds out?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Billy? Which one's I don't know. Whichever one's the speedster. Finds out he can run fast. And she's like, that's fine, you know. And he's like, kick ass. And she thinks to her side, she's like, kick ass. Like, because
I wrote that down in my notes,
They were both in kick ass.
Kick
right?
ass.
Both the actors.
Yes.
And she like has like a
She goes, kick ass.
Like, wait a minute.
And I went... kick ass. Yeah. And I wrote that down in my notes as I was watching. Yeah, that's funny that you brought that up.
But that's the genius of the writing. Like, they didn't have to put that in, but they were like, that's funny. Because they knew they were playing with our brains.
Yeah.
Because we know both those actors played Quicksilver and we're like, ooh, maybe they both are Quicksilver.
Well, I mentioned earlier, I've never seen a show that verged on this level of self-awareness.
Yeah. The misdirects.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at the same time, dropping hints all over the place. I can't believe on the second watch how much Agnes mentions stuff about witchcraft.
My God.
Like, she's like, oh, there's chaos in your house. Like, she talks about all this stuff. She talks about them having kids before they have kids. Like, she drops all these hints throughout the whole thing. So obviously.
I'm glad you brought this up. Because we've only kind of glossed over how good a lot of the acting is in this. Oh, and Catherine Hahn is fucking ridiculous.
She really is.
We talked about earlier how this show draws from Ragnarok.
Yeah.
And another obvious influence is the Legion show on FX, which I have not got into,
I've only seen a couple episodes. Which,
being an X-Men guy, I should at some point.
Yeah, that's true. You should.
For anyone who doesn't know, Legion is David Haller, who is Professor X's illegitimate son.
Yeah.
And he is crazy, crazy, also very similar powers, like reality-altering powers, like Wanda. But that's something else. What was I talking about? Oh, how good Catherine Hahn is.
Catherine Hahn, yeah.
Because she clearly approached this role a lot like when we talked about Ragnarok, like Kate Blanchett did.
Yeah.
I got the same energy, we'll say.
Yeah. She's having fun with
it. She's having so much fun.
Yeah.
And I know Kevin Feige is like, we brought her in to read and we're like, well, we got to use her for something eventually.
Yeah.
And then they needed, we don't know what yet.
Yeah.
Right. And eventually they're like, Oh, right.
This will be perfect.
She would be a great Agatha Harkness. Yeah. And she was.
Yeah.
Like, she goes for it and it's awesome.
Oh, she's all out. She's classic villain. She's classic sitcom villain.
Classic.
Like, she's just classic villain. Like, one dimensional, having fun.
Mm-hmm.
Great villain laugh.
Yeah. Even great lines. Like, one of my favorite lines of the whole show is that she's like, you've been given unlimited power, and what are you doing making breakfast for fucking dinner?
Making breakfast for dinner. That's right. That's what do with it.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I read that she actually drew, her other inspiration was Salieri from Milos Forman's Amadeus. Have you ever seen Amadeus?
I have, yeah.
So you remember.
I was young, though.
So. Yeah.
Didn't appreciate it as much as I would now.
Yeah,
probably,
it came out in the mid 80s and it's actually a brilliant, brilliant film. And one actually I'd love to do on the podcast sometime. But I mean, the tragedy of Salieri is to understand someone's power and, you know, to work at it forever and watch this upstart who doesn't even understand it. Just
nothing,
you know, touched by the hand of God.
Yeah.
And that's the exact situation.
Same vein, same as like Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, it is. Like, it is. It is. I was going
to
say that.
To take it to the other end.
Yeah.
You're like talking about Amadeus,
oh, yeah? Oh, yeah. But I was going to say it if you weren't.
It's the Happy Gilmore.
But it is the exact same situation because Wanda's like, I don't do magic. I go poof and things happen.
Things happen.
And Agnes is like, oh, honey.
She's like, you're ridiculous. Give me your power because I can do something with it.
She's like, come on. All right. Okay. I would rock and roll. And you're making breakfast for dinner out here.
The cool thing too, though, that I also appreciate is the turn at the end where she's like, it's obvious that Wanda's creating all this, but she's not the villain. But at the same time, when Agatha finds out that she is the Scarlet Witch, like there's a reason she has that moniker now, the Scarlet Witch.
Yes.
She is chaos magic. She's even a little scared. She's like, I didn't know it was that serious.
She's like,
you're not supposed to be real. You're not supposed to exist.
The thing that we read about in my books that I get all, I'm like.
She's like, there's a whole chapter on you.
Yeah.
On you.
In the Darkhold, you have a whole chapter.
Yeah. And she's even a little scared. She's like, okay. She's like, I want your power, but that's scary.
Yeah. She's like.
And she's like classic evil villain and she's scared.
Yeah.
So then that's what I mean.
And you know how villains are. They're like. Unlimited power! Yeah. You know, that's a villain move.
She wants the power, but doesn't really want it because she's like, she's scared to unleash it. Let's put it that way. She's a true villain, just wants power. And she's like, oh, but that's too much power for anybody. And so while Wanda isn't the villain in the show, she's using that power. Now at the end.
Well, that's an interesting question because she kind of is the villain in the
show. She is. I mean, she is the one causing all the problems.
I mean, like, well, Hayward is a villain.
He is a villain, too.
But throughout the course of the show, Hayward makes a lot of statements that ethically are sound.
Yeah.
It's not until he, tries to shoot kids where you're like, okay, he's also a bad guy.
Well, he's also trying to build a weapon.
Yes. And also
using all these people to build a weapon.
Yes.
So
he's doing some classic government villain stuff,
yeah.
But when he says things like, he's like, you can't control people and determine their life and just take them hostage so you work through your grief. That's torture.
He calls it terrorist.
Yeah, that's, and.
And Monica Rambeau's like, she's not a terrorist. And he's like, I mean, it's pretty much the definition of.
Yeah, yeah. Is he wrong though? You know,
these are his questions that they bring up. They're big questions.
Yeah. This is also a very slyly ethical show.
But what I was getting at was, where does the future go for this? Like, because Wanda now realizes she has this ultimate power. And she's like, okay, I'm going to learn about it.
Yeah, she's like, well, I was just going whoosh before. Yeah.
And
almost beating Thanos.
It just, yeah. And now it opens up this whole thing. And even, like, in the post-credits scene in the last thing, like, she's, like, making tea and stuff. And
chilling.
Meanwhile, on an alternate plane, learning all about her skills and magic, right?
Yeah.
Her skills of magic. No, anyways. She's learning.
Known for skills and magic.
She's learning about it. But even Doctor Strange can't do that. He does that while he's sleeping. He's sleeping and an alternate plane is reading a book. Mm-hmm. But she's like making tea and like reading multiple things like all over. Yeah. Right. And it's like, where does the future go for her? So it's going to be very, very interesting. I love that they set that up too. That it's like she's not like, I guess what I meant by she's not the bad guy is that she's not intentionally trying to hurt people. But she has this. Well, she has this crazy amount of power.
Yes.
And where does that go? How can she? How can she control it?
And well,
because Agatha says she's like, you don't know what you've unleashed.
Yeah.
Like you don't know what.
And
you've
that's
done.
Actually it parallels the comics well. That's always been her struggle.
Exactly.
Is at what line does she, you know, put the line in the sand and be like, it's bad for everybody. I mean, House of X. That's how it all starts. Kills some of the Avengers, they, you know, like, and she decimates the mutants and all sorts of things just as like with words.
Yeah.
You know, and
just because she wants to
or because of her emotional struggle or whatever. Yeah. Right.
Well, and she's okay. So that's the other thing is they showed is she still has that struggle because of her kids. Like they can, you can hear them kind of saying, help me or whatever at the end. Right.
Yeah.
And she's doing all this. She's obviously going to go after her kids. She's going to be the next Doctor Strange. Right. And so it's like, I don't know, like it's very interesting story because so far they have barely used her in the MCU. Like
barely.
They kind of just used her as a plot device in Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
And then like they've had her there with her minute powers. Like you said, just kind of like poofing out of her hands, moving, throwing cars. She throws a ton of cars. That's her go-to move is throwing cars at people. I don't know why. She even does it in this. And then they have that cool Wizard of Oz joke.
Legos. She's always throwing cars. Yeah.
And they have that the Wizard of Oz where she looks under the car and sees Agatha's boots, right?
Oh, yeah. I noticed that too. Yeah, that was good.
I thought it was funny that she threw one more car.
Well, I you said it before. I don't think they realized what kind of gem they realized they had in Elizabeth Olsen.
Oh, yeah.
Because her acting in this is superb.
Yeah, it really is. Like, throughout the whole, I mean, there's so many moments, but the third episode at the end, she's kind of gotten, she's at the point where she's gotten everything she's ever wanted, right? Like, it kind of falls apart in an instant, right?
Yeah.
Like, she has Vision back, she's in this home, now in color, and she has, her twins are just born, and she's super happy, right? And Monica Rambeau. But it kind of comes to her. She's like, wait, I was a twin. And then it comes crashing down.
Yeah.
And that moment where she's like super happy looking at the kids, her newborn babies, and then realizing she's like, I'm a twin. And then like it comes crashing down. Man, it's such a powerful scene.
It is.
The acting in that is so good.
It's so good. It's so good. Paul Bettany too.
Well, I mean, like you say, he has some of the most powerful lines in... If any of the MCU movies, period. In this show.
Some of the best acting, I think, in the MCU, period.
Yeah.
And I worry that this show is kind of going to get lost in the mix long run.
It will.
And these kind of things might not get forgotten or get talked about, but it should be remarked especially how good Paul Bettany and Elizabeth Olsen are in the show. I mean, Paul Bettany wasn't even supposed to be the Vision.
No. Well, when they had the meeting, right?
Yeah.
They called him in, Kevin Feige and like whatever other producers called him in. And he's like, well, last I remember was I was in Infinity War and they killed me. He's like, Paul Bettany's like, I came into the meeting and I was like, well, they're going to give me my handshake. Be like, yeah, thanks for all your years of service. It was great. We had a lot of fun. You know, he's like, I thought it was a closing meeting. And he's like, and they pitched me WandaVision. He was like, oh my God. He's like, not only am I not dead, but you're giving me this?
Yeah.
Whoa. This is like, he's like, this is the biggest role you've given me yet. He's like, and I've done 15 movies or whatever, right? He was Jarvis and Vision.
Yep.
He's like, I've been in all of them. And now you give me this? He was like, man, he's like, I leapt at the opportunity. He was like, I couldn't, when he left the meeting, he's like, I couldn't believe how lucky I was.
Elizabeth Olsen felt the same way.
Yeah.
There, she's like, I'm not going to do more with the Scarlet Witch unless you give me something interesting to do. And then they gave her this and she's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow. But how actually, have you ever heard the story of Paul Bettany realizing that he was going to be the physical manifestation of Vision?
No, I didn't hear that.
Like moving beyond Jarvis and that they were going to, he was going to become the Vision. Oh, it's an awesome story. Because he was literally in a, he doesn't mention who, because you know you don't in these situations, he was in the middle of a meeting where he was being told by a producer who was a producer of note that he was done as an actor.
Okay.
And I kind of get why, right? Like, because Paul Bettany had probably not appeared in anything for a while. He's like, you're fucking done, man.
Yeah. And he was just doing voice acting, really.
He was just doing voice acting.
Of Jarvis.
You know, he's like, there's no more Wimbledon movies out there for you. Or Margin Calls like or whatever else. Yeah, I know you do. But you know what I mean? Like, he's like, as somebody who's somebody out there,
he's great in A Knight's Tale, too. And that movie's not great.
We should do a Knight's Tale pod.
I would love it. But anyways.
Paul Bettany. But he's in the middle of this meeting and he's like, you're fucking done, Junior. And Paul Bettany's like, oh, I don't think so, man.
Yeah.
You know, because you're going to get emotional in a meeting like that.
Well, yeah. You don't just roll over and be like, yeah, okay.
But the producer's like, yo, you got to shake your ass on out of here because I meant what I said. You're done. So he's sitting on the curb and his phone rings and it's Joss Whedon on the phone. And he's like, we're thinking of upping you to be the Vision.
Yeah.
Because he was just Jarvis at the time, right?
Yeah.
And is that something you'd be interested in doing? And he was like,
yeah, I think so.
He's like, I'm into that. I think
that might be fun.
He's like, I'm into that. Let's do it, man. Let's do it. It's become one of those roles now where I can't see anyone else doing it.
No. Oh, for sure. I mean, I'm truly excited now that he's out there again. Like I said, White Vision is out there. So now we get more Paul Bettany as Vision. And it's a different take on it, which is exciting for him. Like, he's not as emotional, right? He's going to be a lot more, like, robotic. And, like, I don't know. It's going
to
be cool.
It'll be cool to see how that shakes out, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. On the other side, though, I mean, we talked about, which I think are some of the core performances of this show. I mean, like, we'll say the real life side, I really enjoyed Randall Park in this.
Oh, my God. He was great.
Wasn't he so funny in this?
But I mean, to be fair, he was good in Ant-Man 2. And
I love how they leveled him up, though.
Yes.
Because his magic in Ant-Man was shitty.
Yeah. Well, he learned.
And now it's good.
He's so excited. He was like, how'd you do that? Like in Ant-Man and the Wasp, right? He's like, how'd you do that?
Yeah.
And that he learned how to do it. He's like, here's my card.
That was some good writing.
Yeah. He can escape those handcuffs.
And he does flourish.
Yeah.
You know, that's good.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they consciously knew that because there was so much going on inside the hex, as they call it, in the bubble.
In the hex, yep.
That they kind of
needed. Oh, you're calling it the hex. See, it's catching on.
Well, that's the thing is there's a real aesthetic about this show. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of hexagons. They call things the hex.
We haven't talked about the imagery and use of color yet.
Oh, God, no. Or the cinematography.
Yep.
But one thing at a time, man.
Yeah.
One thing at a time.
Back to Randall Park.
Yeah, but back to Randall Park. Great moments of levity, comic foil. Yes. And it almost made, I'm like, I'm glad they gave him something really good to do.
Yeah, me too.
Because I'm like, that's something you could use him now to do other stuff.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, now awesome. He could be in anything.
Yeah.
You know, he's just with the FBI.
Like, I don't know what they got planned for Monica Rambeau and the Skrulls and that on her side.
Well, obviously, that's going to be a big thing. Like, she's going to be in.
But he could be in that show
with Nick Fury. She's probably, I mean, she's obviously going to be in the next. Yeah, he could be. Yeah, he could. Well, his role, he could be in any show. Being with the FBI.
That's true.
He could just be in any.
Like, I don't know if they're going to use Monica Rambeau for the next Captain Marvel movie.
I'm sure. She's going to be in the next Captain Marvel for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't know what the plan whole thing. Is there.
She got her powers now, so.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see how that shakes out, right? But a show like this kind of needed that character.
Yeah, for sure.
Because he's really almost the only guy. And Kat Dennings.
Him and Kat Dennings and are Kat those Dennings characters.
Are those characters.
They play off, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Like, they needed those, characters, right? So I'm like, that's kind of awesome. Because everyone, this show is like a watch.
Yeah.
You know, like all the pieces.
All the pieces fit together.
Yeah. So, and you need that little coil.
Yeah.
And Randall Park in the show is that little coil.
Yeah.
right? Like he moves just that way, right? Like, so,
well, fantastic. And he helps move the plot along a lot.
Yes.
He does a lot of the heavy moving.
Yeah. I love that when like, he first encounters, what's the Westview?
Yeah.
What's it called?
Yep.
Which is, I got to remark this quick little Easter egg thing. The, Kevin Feige is from a town called like West Place or something like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so what they did was they changed it from, I'm going to get it right. Oh, I'm going to do the thing. Westfield.
Westfield.
He's from a town called Westfield, which is that kind of, kind of town. Yeah. And they changed it to Westview because now it's WV.
Ah, I didn't even put that together.
Yeah. Yeah. So that I got that from the homework. I didn't put that together.
Okay. Okay.
I didn't figure that one out, man. I'm giving the internet credit for that one. Some of these things I do myself.
Speaking of that, I love that moment where Randall Park is and he rolls up and he's like, there's something wrong. And Monica Rambeau rolls up. And he's like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, Westview apparently doesn't exist. There's a big sign that says, welcome to Westview.
Yeah.
And the cops are there. And she's like, well, where are you from? He's like, they're like, Eastview.
Eastview.
Like, okay, but there's no Westview. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
And she's like, and then just she like, walks up and she's about to touch it. And he's like, you're going to touch it? Yeah. Okay.
Okay. That seems like a poor decision.
Yeah. He's like, okay. Yeah. Like, I'm glad somebody's here to remark this because there's a, you know, an anomaly in physics. And I'm like, you know what I'm going to do is touch it.
Just touch it. Yeah.
I mean, I've been through a lot of shit in my life, but I don't try to touch anomalies in physics.
No.
I'm like, you know, I'm like, whatever that is.
Yeah.
I'm just going to let it go, you know, but Monica Rambeau's like, she don't fucking care. She's like, wah, wah. The same thing for she's trying to drive the truck into it. And they're like, everyone's like, don't you drive that truck into there. And she's like, I don't care. I can drive the truck.
I like how they're like, it'll coast through easily. They're constantly underestimating Wanda. Right. And I just like how he remarks, I thought what happened to coasting through easily?
Yeah, what happened? Yeah,
coast. What happened to that?
What happened to that? Remember that? She's like, I'm gonna coast through easily. Like, okay. Turns out it took a lot of work, and it gave you superpowers. So there's that.
That's true. Yeah. She got her photon power.
Yeah,
that's what she'll be as his photon. Because like she was a few things in the comics, right?
Yeah, that's not a character I know a ton about.
Well, she became the new Captain Marvel, but she went by Photon. The most,
okay.
So, and they reference that in you see like the picture of her mom,
yeah,
and her like call sign is Photon. So,
oh, okay.
So that'll be her superhero moniker. Yeah. Will be Photon or whatever. Maybe she'll become Captain Marvel in 5 years or whatever. Who knows with their plans?
It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. But no, I mean, I fell in love with this show. The first time I watched it, and I didn't get the griping that people had about it.
It's so rewarding,
yeah. But you have to give it time. I think that's the biggest thing, is that you have to give it time. Like, as a comic book reader, I got that. I was like, oh man, I love this because it's like reading a comic book.
Yes. So
I gotta wait till, I mean, it was weekly, but like a comic, you gotta wait a month or bi-weekly for the big ones, but you gotta wait to read that next story to get the next little tidbit, right? Yeah. And I love that this show was like that.
Well, I don't know if I can't remember if I mentioned before or not, but the degree of care, and like when we talked about Logan, we talked about care.
Yeah.
This show from top to bottom, like the aesthetic,
yeah,
the cinematography, how it looks, the use of color.
Yeah. Yeah, we haven't talked about that yet, the color.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Flawless.
It's perfect, yeah. For a show that the first two episodes are in black and white, the use of color is so important in this show.
Yeah.
So important.
Well, even quickly is a blip, and it's what draws you in. Like, I noticed this upon my rewatch, is in the Stark commercial for the toaster.
The light turns red.
The light is red in a tiny, and I'm like, why is it red?
Yeah.
You know,
it's
like.
Super important. But, I mean, in the end, it's not, but it's just to show you that something's wrong.
Yeah, but it puts something in your mind.
Yes.
Like, you know, when the helicopter. It's the Hansel and Gretel crumb of. Yeah, bread, you know,
when the helicopter lands in her bushes, it's not.
It's building now at that point.
Exactly, and it's in color, and yes. It's like, okay, well, something's obviously wrong, and it's not just wrong to the viewer.
What was that Tobey Maguire movie? The one where
Pleasantville. They used Pleasant. Actually, that was a very.
I think that because that's what it reminded me of too.
Yes, and they said they drew inspiration from Pleasantville a lot.
Yeah, yeah, so, I can see it. Right?
So the color was very important. And
yeah.
The point with the helicopter is that Wanda didn't know what was going on. She was like, why is this in color? Basically, she's looking at it something's wrong.
She's like, wait, I don't understand
in
this.
In
my world. So yeah. That's weird.
So something is definitely like
something
wrong
is amiss.
Here. And yeah. It had the sword logo on it, right? Which is also they're hinting at sword.
Yes, of course.
So again, as somebody who doesn't read the comics, you don't know what sword is.
Well, they repurposed it slightly for the show.
They did repurpose it slightly, but I'm just saying, like, it's you know, another version
very
of
Very briefly, sword was introduced in Astonishing X-Men.
Yes.
And was meant for off-world threats.
Yes, that's right. They kind of alluded to, though, with Nick Fury in space after Spider-Man.
True.
Right? He's in space, they're building some big space thing.
Yeah.
They kind of alluded
to. But this
to sword.
Also, they kind of bring, in order to bring Vision under that umbrella.
That's right.
Of what was...
Weapons instead
yeah,
of...
Yeah, sentient weapons instead of sentient worlds.
That's right.
That's the difference in the sword.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But my point is, like, as a comic viewer, like, at the very end of the very first episode, they show... It turns out to be Darcy watching the show, but you don't know. You just know somebody with a notebook with a sword logo, and I'm like, as a comic reader, I'm like, oh, shit.
Oh, shit.
It's sword watching, and I was like, something big is going on. Now, you don't know at the time that they're monitoring it, like, right? Like, Wanda's just... putting this out there and they're watching it. At the time, you're like, oh, are they doing this to her? Like, that's more of going back to that red herring thing.
Yes.
You're like, oh, are they the bad guys? Because, like, sword is kind of like shield, but greasy. Like,
well,
as far as the comics go.
Well, I wouldn't say greasy. I'd just be like working at a different scope.
Yeah.
Yeah. So their ethical questions are different.
Yeah, that's fair. Their ethical questions are different.
Like, I mean, if you understand Sword in the comic, like, their head dated Beast for a while. And she's like, look, your Earth is a backwater.
Yeah.
She's like,
pretty much, yeah.
You know, I'm dealing with, and that's actually something you get consistently throughout Marvel Comics, is that Earth is kind of a backwater.
Yeah, that's true. Like, well, they're not advanced. Like, there's so many advanced societies.
Like, even in the X-Men, there's the Shi'ar.
Yes.
This great, grandiose, multi-planet civilization where Earth is like, we can't figure our shit out here.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the part of the joke, right?
Yeah.
But Sword is, we're just working at a different level, so they have different ethical concerns.
Right.
And that's really what they're all about, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
But so that's what I'm saying, though, as a comic background. And I love, I guess that's what I'm trying to throw it back to, is that I fell in love with the show because they put things in there like that. Now, the purpose in there by putting that sword thing is just for people that aren't into comics is to introduce you to it. Like, this is an organization. Like, you understand that symbol means something because you see it there. Then you see it on the helicopter. You see it on the beekeeper's back.
Monica wears it as a pendant.
You get it. Like, you know, like, oh, this is some sort of organization. Now, are they good or are they bad? You don't know.
You don't know.
And even as a comic reader, you don't know. That's what that was my point about Sword, is you're like, whoa, are they doing this for Wanda's good or are they using Wanda?
Yeah.
Because that's how they operate.
But of course, they're using Vision.
But it turns out, flip the switch again, like this show does all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Nope, they were using Vision.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they were just intrigued that Wanda was able to have her own Vision. They were like, but we have Vision's body.
Who is this Vision? Yeah, Hayward's like,
we have this Vision. How do we get that Vision?
He's like, wait. We just thought it was just a bunch of vibranium, and that was the point of Vision, and we put it together, and we'll have a Vision.
Yeah.
And Wanda's like, no, I just made one.
Yeah. And then he's like, well, we'll take some of that and make ours.
Yeah. Except a controllable one.
Yeah.
Except not.
Except now it's not. I don't know. It's all confusing.
Man.
Just speaking of we were talking about the importance of color in this.
Yeah, of course.
And then and that they threw in the comic book stuff. But the characters wear their colors throughout. Like, once the color is in episode 3, they wear their colors consistently. Like, there's nothing more comic book than that. Because even when they're not wearing their costume, even though they do in the Halloween episode, they wear their costumes.
No, they go all the way.
Which is incredible to
me. That's all the way, full 80s.
They go full costume.
Yeah.
But throughout it, the whole thing, no matter what they're wearing, they wear their colors. Like, Agnes wears purple. Like, when she's wearing in the 80s episode, when she's wearing her spandex, it's purple.
Yeah.
Scarlet Witch, like, Wanda wears red all the time.
Consistently.
Vision wears yellow and burgundy all the time. Like, they wear their colors consistently.
Yep.
And I mean, like, so for, like I said, for a show, such little things like that, it's such a fine detail. And again, it's bringing the comic books really into the world, because for a long time, the MCU used the comics as inspiration, but toned it down, always toned it down. Like, if you look at the Scarlet Witch in the movies, like, she wears a red coat. That's about as close as she gets.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas here, they're like, yeah, she wears red all the time. Like, that's a more comic book thing. And then, like, you know, like you said, she wears her
eventually
actual
they finally costume. Actually integrate the tiara.
They give her the full costume.
Yeah.
And they give it reason, too. They're not just like, she wants to wear a costume. They're like, well, she's the Scarlet Witch, legendary.
Yeah.
And that's what the Scarlet Witch
wears. I like how they manifested his energy instead of like just totally. As though, you know, yeah. like, and that actually makes a lot
Which
of sense.
Which also makes sense.
Yeah. yeah. I like how they went that way.
Yeah. It's genius.
Yeah. No, the use of color, it's in, like, not just that, but I mean, it's obviously in reinforcing the sitcom tropes too.
Yes, that too. Well, I mean, like, if you notice the Brady Bunch episode, the third episode is in like super color.
Grainy super color.
And everything is super bright color. Like, their fence is yellow. And like, the other thing I love is the background is painted. You notice it. It's noticeably like a painting.
No, it's obviously a painting.
Yeah.
The trees are terrible.
Yeah.
Like, literally, but while Herb is like cutting the shit out of his fence.
That's right.
You're like, those are not trees.
Yeah, exactly.
That is somebody painted some trees on a wall.
And
that is the only instance of this whole show like that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It's.
I think that's actually what it was kind of like jarring for a lot of people at the end. Is because they kind of went MCU at the end.
They did. They full on did. But I think they had to because they were bringing it back. They were like, okay, it's like, folding back in.
I never thought about that, but that actually makes a lot of sense. They're like, look, we're integrating this finally. This is the final. And you're like, this is still part of this world. And we did our thing.
Yeah.
Right. And it's going to fold back in eventually.
The last two episodes were all entirely in widescreen.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So like, that's exactly what it is. They're like, it's folded back in. They're like, okay, enough of the silliness. Like, yeah. Wanda's gotten through that, so now we're back into the real world.
Because even in the cinematography in the sitcom parts was perfect.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they used different lighting and everything.
Different lighting and everything. Like, the Modern Family stuff, the Malcolm in the Middle stuff is exactly the same.
Yeah.
The range of shots, it looks...
They said short of using old cameras, they created lenses that would look like old cameras. Short of actually using those cameras, they pretty much film them the way that they filmed those old shows.
It looks the same.
They filmed them in front of a studio audience, the first two.
Really?
Real studio. Yeah. They legit had audience.
I can't
remember.
I think it's the very first episode, live in front of a studio audience.
Was literally live
in front of a studio audience.
Yes.
Oh, that's super cool.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's super cool.
The details in this show.
Oh, it's... Someone got paid overtime.
Yeah, well, we're talking about the production of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of that credit obviously goes to the showrunner and director.
Yes.
Which is the same, right? Showrunner, obviously, and the director directed all 9 episodes.
Matt Shakman.
Yeah, Matt Shakman.
Directed every episode.
Yeah.
And really implemented what I think is a clear vision from the showrunner, who was Jack Schaefer.
Yes.
She also did Captain Marvel.
Yep.
Black Widow.
And Black Widow.
She is looking to be a big part of what I think Marvel wants to do going forward.
I think so. I mean, they've obviously put some big ones in her hands already.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
she's had a good year. WandaVision, now Black Widow's come out.
Good year.
Yeah.
Good year. And she's really kind of getting real influence at a very interesting time in terms of the MCU because, I mean, our very first episode was Iron Man.
Yeah.
And... When we talked about Iron Man, one of the big things I think that was a takeaway from that episode is that Jon Favreau at the time remarked that the watchword for that was plausibility.
Yeah.
It was very science-driven. And over the course of the narrative events of Endgame, we've ended up at this kind of place of magic.
That is true, yeah.
And these are the key, I would say, conflicting yin and yang of comics is, you know, rationality, irrationality, magic, science, and the conflict of those things.
Yeah.
And now is the time that Marvel is really starting to go the other way.
Very much so. Yeah.
Really getting in the other direction. Yeah. Like a good example of that is I don't think we've touched on the end credit scene yet.
Yes.
Of WandaVision. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think we talked a little bit about how she's super powerful, obviously, right? Like, she's even more powerful than Doctor Strange
in
that she's learning all this magic. She's actually learning about her powers.
Yeah.
While making tea.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, even she says to Agatha, she's like, I don't do magic, I just go poof.
Yeah, exactly. She's like, I don't know. And she's like, no, you're the Scarlet Witch. You don't know how powerful you are. And I think that's a big part of the show, is that she's barely scraped the surface of her powers.
Yes.
Right? They talk about how she could have taken down Thanos if he hadn't rained fire or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Really, if she had the scope of her powers, it would have been nothing.
Mm-hmm.
She just would have been like, that Infinity Gauntlet's gone. That's
Infinity Gauntlet.
It's mine now.
It's a fish.
Yeah. It's a fish.
Wow, wow, wow. You know, like, it almost negates the whole story, right? Because you need to, if she actually reaches the scope of her powers, I mean, we're going to see what that maybe looks like in the Doctor Strange movie coming up.
Yeah, well, I think they've already alluded to that. I mean, the name is Multiverse of Madness. And with this end credit scene, she's clearly diving deep into her powers and being like, she's realized, she's like, I don't know anything about what I can do.
Okay, because we haven't really talked, Loki's out now.
Yes.
I haven't seen any of it yet, but I'm going to soon, so we can do an episode on that soon.
Coming soon. You need to watch Loki.
I need to watch Loki. But so I think we're starting to really get a kind of picture of where the MCU is going.
Yes.
For the next few years. And if it's like this, we've been given in WandaVision, it's in good hands, because they have have some really good ideas.
Yeah.
One of the big things that it's going to come up in Multiverse of Madness, obviously, but one of the big themes of this show, which we only really touched on, is the nature of reality.
Yeah.
And to what degree is Wanda going to be able to control that going forward?
Yeah, like, I mean, that's a major part of her powers. Learning her
powers is... It opens the doors to so many different... A lot. Yeah. Virtually, you know, like, whatever you can conceive, really. Yeah.
And that's kind of what I touched on before, right? Agatha says, like, you don't understand how terrible and awesome your powers are.
It's chaos.
Like, it's like, yeah, exactly.
It is literally chaos. So
as much as she's learning how to control it, it also means it's going to be problems. Right? That's kind of what they're alluding to, which in the comics makes total sense. Well, that's how it is.
That's the thing, is... And even in that end scene, they kind of hint at it, right? Like, one of the things that she was given in this in her little bubble, in her hex, was sons.
Right.
Now, to what degree is she going to move heaven and earth in order to get her sons back?
Yeah.
Now that she knows what that life looks like.
Yep.
We've already seen that, whether intentional or not, she is willing to sacrifice other people's happiness and
for her own.
For her own. Right? It's still unclear. I mean, she is a hero.
Yeah.
But a lot of what she does in the show is not heroic.
Exactly. Going forward is, and I think we touched on it earlier, is what's she going to do, be a hero or going to be the villain? Like, she's going to be in that gray area.
Yeah.
I truly believe. And that's how she is in the comics too, right?
Yeah.
She's kind of back and forth, flip-flops. So
like Magneto.
If they use her that way, that's genius. I would love that. But yeah, we'll see.
Because you could push her into this kind of big bad spot.
Yeah. She has enough power.
You know? And I believe that there's been arcs like that.
Yes.
In the comics before. Yeah. Like, beyond House of M. Like, where Wanda...
Yeah,
like,
back in the past. She was straight up Brotherhood of Mutant villain, right?
Yeah, yeah. The Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. You know, like, her and Quicksilver both. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how that shakes out.
Yeah.
But one thing we haven't really talked about yet, and this show actually really cemented it for me, is that a commonplace criticism of the Marvel movies, of the MCU movies, is that they're kind of pop fluff.
Yeah.
They don't demand...
Yeah, they've taken a lot of criticism.
A lot of you for that. They're popcorn movies that they have made a baseline common denominator of what we expect from our entertainment.
Sure, yeah.
You can't say that about this show.
No, I was going to say, they've taken hits for not being deep, right? They're just very surface, for fun kind of things. But this show exactly is the exact opposite.
It's the exact opposite. Yeah. And I mean, and it does so even in a self-referential, metatextual way, because it plays with what we expect out of our entertainment.
Yeah, very much.
You know, like, Wanda literally puts herself in an escapist position.
Yeah.
She's like, I just want to live my life and, you know, and just watch MCU movies.
Yeah, pretty much.
Her equivalent.
Her equivalent of it.
Her equivalent, right?
Yeah, yeah, well, old sitcoms, right?
Old sitcoms.
Like, she just wants to live in an old sitcom.
She's like,
that's what I'm going
to
do.
The hell of my normal life. I just need to escape that for half an hour.
Yep.
And that's why I feel like the criticisms of the MCU and both and this show are kind of this show shows that there's a value to that.
Right.
That you don't have to be watching art films all the damn time.
That is a great, great point. Yeah.
Right?
Like, and that's how I feel too.
Yeah. I mean, that was good enough to be my last point, maybe.
Circle back.
Yeah, we'll circle back. That was like, I mean, but as a work of absurdist theater that interplays with the audience, it's, I was really surprised that they would come out of the box and do something like this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big risk taking it because it doesn't fall in line with the other MCU movies of being surface stuff. It's very deep.
Very deep.
Yeah. And I think that's why a lot of people had a hard time digesting it too, though. They wanted a surface show.
Because it has things to say about pop culture, metaphysics, artificial intelligence, you know, like actual physics. There are intellectual ideas here.
Yeah.
It's
hidden in
a
silly show, too.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't think I had too much more. You know, like, all the big stuff, you know, like what is the nature of reality? Is it the one we invent? Yep. Or is it the one that persists and we live? Like, you know, that's Wanda's real struggle.
That's Wanda.
At what point does the fake become more real than the real?
Yeah. Well, I mean, she made her kids and now she's like, yeah, I have kids.
It's an interesting question with somebody who can work beyond the physical world and create a metaphysic of her own. Well, what is that going to, I just love what they might have on the docket going forward. Like I said, I haven't seen Loki yet, but I'm sure it continues very much in this vein.
Oh yeah, very much so.
Yeah. And for anybody who is familiar with Marvel Comics, it's basically been a staple.
Yes.
Of the alternate realities of time travel.
Yep.
Of working with these kind of themes. Parallel universes. It's something they haven't explored much.
Yeah.
In the 10 years previous in the MCU. And now they can really get weird with it.
They will now. Exactly. Like now, like you said, the beginning from Iron Man, that was kind of the opposite direction they were going. They wanted to ground it in reality. And now they're at the point where they're like, well, but what is reality though?
Yeah.
So they can change everything now, which, I mean, opens up a whole slew of possibilities for them.
Yeah. So if you don't like to think, maybe going forward, if you just like to see shit blow up, maybe rewatch Transformers. I don't know.
I mean, Falcon and Winter Soldier is still out there.
Yeah,
is. That's a show on that level, more of the standard MCU.
It is, yeah, it is very standard.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you can't make that criticism of of what they're doing anymore.
No. Agreed. That's true. They kind of flipped that.
Yeah. A lot of this, to me, is art.
Yes.
It deserves that title. Whether or not it succeeds all the time is a different question, but I'm like, this it's not just populist fluff anymore.
No, they're at least trying for it.
Yeah, which is a hallmark of great comic book storytelling.
Yes.
Right? Like you remarked earlier that this is a lot like a comic book. We're finally seeing it.
Yep.
In terms of ideas, execution, and these...
Just the feel of it.
Yeah, the feel of it.
Just how the storyline is.
And dealing with the nature of reality and time travel and things like that is something that Marvel has been known for over the years.
Yeah.
You know, like the 70s, Jim Starlin, Silver Surfer, Thanos, cosmic stuff.
Yep.
Those are regarded as great arcs. A lot of the X-Men arcs play with time travel or alternate realities.
Oh, yeah. All of it, Cable, Bishop, all that.
All that stuff.
Alternate futures, right?
Alternate futures. And that's the kind of storytelling that Marvel is actually... historically been known for.
That's true. And now they're leaning into it.
And now they're leaning into it, which I find really cool. And I find is very exciting for me on a personal level. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are like, well, you told Iron Man Thor stories. And so where do you do going forward? Well, it's like, well, maybe you have these kind of ideas and tell those kind of stories.
That is exactly what they're doing. It's different. It's different from what they've already done. And I think, again, that was what made it hard for some people to watch this. I think a lot of people didn't get what they were trying to do. And so, I mean, I just beg you, if you're one of those people that have only watched the first two episodes, just keep watching.
Yeah.
Because, I mean...
it's an infinitely rewarding show.
Yes, exactly.
It improves upon rewatches. Like, I got a lot more out of the second time, and I got a lot out of the first time than I did
The first time you got all the feelings, all the red herrings and the stuff pulling you back and forth. What's going on? Your brain is going nuts. Like, what are they doing? What's going on?
Yeah.
And the second time you get the huge scope of it and you're like, oh, this is going to be like, this is a massive epic tale in a tiny little story.
But also like the quiet, like, you know, like the love story element.
Well, yeah. So I'm saying it's a tiny little personal story, but it has this big epic thing in the background. And that's what really works. That's what your brain is thinking about the whole time, right?
Yes.
It's the big epic background while all this stuff is going on in the foreground.
I said before, layered like an onion.
It's layered like yep.
But I think that was actually, I ticked off almost everything I think I wanted to talk about.
Yep, I think we talked about our main points.
Well, we gave a shout out to everyone, I think mostly.
Yep.
Like the cast, uniformly excellent.
That's, yeah.
You know, again, we've talked about this before. MCU doesn't mess around when it comes to casting.
No. Well, I mean, like I said, this show was kind of gifted because all these casting was done previously.
Yeah.
And they were kind of like, you have all these actual movie stars to throw into this show.
Yeah.
So they were kind of gifted with incredible talent.
Yeah. But no, the writing.
The writing.
Generally amazing. Incredibly strong.
And then the production, like we said, the showrunner had a clear vision and the director executed amazingly with the cinematography.
Oh, yes.
Like you said, filming in front of a live studio audience for one to give the feel. Each show has its own, each episode, I should say, has its own feel, right? Of
yes.
its time, which was their goal. And he did an amazing job.
Amazing. Yeah. That it was all done by one person is kind of mind blowing.
Well, I mean, I think it helps. Instead of being kind of like a mixed bag, he had a clear vision of what the next episode was going to look like. So this one could look like the 50s. The next one's going to look like the 60s. And he knew what was going on.
Yeah. Yeah. No, not a lot of cracks in the armor of this show.
No, please give this show a chance if you haven't. That's my final thoughts.
Because, I mean, it's some of the most interesting television of the year.
Yeah.
I it's funny. Okay, I got a little bit of a disclaimer. Is we had to cut this one in two parts because there was so much to say. And
we're drinking the same beer, though.
We are drinking the same beer. I remarked earlier this isn't the kind of show that wins awards.
Mm.
But since then, it's been nominated for 26 Emmys.
Yeah. Apparently, it's going to win a lot of awards.
So maybe it will win some awards. But I actually think those were mostly my final thoughts.
Yeah.
It needs. Give it a chance.
Definitely give it a chance. And if you're one of those people that has given it a chance like us, you get it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. If it's not your bag, that's cool. I mean, like I said, you know, F9 is out. So if that's your speed, then watch that. You know? Right?
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry.
Right.
Right? Like if you're operating, it's all about the family, and that's the level that you're working at. Then that's
as long as you have family.
Hey, it's all entertainment, and that's the other point of this show.
Hey, that is a major point of this show.
That's a major point of the show. Mm-hmm. All right, as long as it takes you out of, you know, your life for an hour, and gives you something, you know, like that you can face the day. Right, because that's really at the end of the day, whether it's high art or pop culture.
Yep.
It's you know sometimes it demands. You a little more of you, and sometimes you can turn your brain off.
Yeah.
This show demanded a little more of you.
Yes, it definitely.
So I'm really grateful for this show. It's awesome.
Yep. I fell in love. I've said it earlier. I'll say it again. This is one of my favorite shows.
Well,
of all
in the long run, this will be in my favorites tier for the Marvel stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. It's just, if for nothing, no other reason, the execution.
Yeah.
Mind blowing to me. Immaculate.
Yep.
But I think that's probably it, eh?
Yeah, I think so. So that's the end of us talking about WandaVision. So join us on Instagram at beers.n.banter.mc and hit that like button, follow us, and definitely put stuff in the comments. We want to hear what you think.
Please.
We want to hear what stuff you want us to talk about. And above all, we want to hear what beers are good to drink.
Mm-hmm. Always.
We're a bit of a lush. We're lushes. We like to drink. So
that's the whole point of this show.
That's true. This Cronenberg Fruit Rouge is going down real nice with the elderberry and raspberries.
Very nice. Very
delicious.
Nice.
But
I like normal Cronenberg, but this is a nice change of pace for sure. Very
well, we went the red theme, right? Red.
Yep.
Scarlet Witch. All right. So signing off. Until next time. Party on, Colin.
Party on, Mike.
tickles my intellectual balls.